PhD possesses a voice of such distinction, which harnessed to a keen ear for memorable material makes for indestructible durability. To make timeless music, records which play well in any decade against a backdrop of fickle changing fashions is evidence of an ongoing ability to be envied by most of pop's transient stars. Let's welcome to the show the one and only Tony Christie, and a very good day to you, Tony.
Good day to you too, and thanks for reading that out. I'd forgotten, I'd written that a long time ago.
Well, I'll tell you something. I mean, we've been playing your songs today, and you know, the more that you hear an artist work and the range of the lovely songs that you've done, you hear an odd one now and again, but then put them all together and you get a very different perspective. Mm-hmm. So, well done for leaving us so many wonderful songs to be able to play, but can I get you back to the very early days? And, when I often ask the stars that I talk with, when you were at school, did you feel that your future would be in music, or what was it like when you were at school?
I always felt that I wanted to be a singer, even from being at junior school. I don't know how you know things, but when I was sort of 5, 6, 7, I don't know what it is. I just knew I was going to be a singer, and I don't know why. Possibly because when you're singing in the classroom, teacher sort of started moving me to the front of the class, and saying that you lead the singing because you were the best singer in the class and all that kind of thing. So I thought, well, maybe I am.
Well, it's funny because my background is also a teaching background before I came back to show business. Mm-hmm. And as you were saying that, I could remember you every now and again had just one child in front of you, and you could see that kid was a little bit special, and you never knew exactly what it would be, but you knew the kid was going to be special. But very often when we're looking at, say, for example, on a Monday, we've been looking at the Merseybeat phenomenon. Mm-hmm. And how often do the people who have become the musicians that we've all known and loved their work, they've not really had a formal education as such, but they've picked it up as they've gone along. Now, was that the way that you learned to play your guitar and construct your songs and that sort of thing?
I was surrounded by music. the whole family seemed to be musical. My dad played the piano. My granddad, on my mum's side, played the piano. My granddad on my dad's side played the squeeze box. They were Irish. My grandma played the fiddle in a Cayley band. And my uncles, one particularly, was a very, very good singer, excellent singer. So I was surrounded by music all my life. I thought that everybody could sing. I was, quite a shock when he went to the real world. So that's my musical upbringing, is really listening to everything around me.
And it's funny because you try and put something in your mind as a time frame, but then when you've got somebody like yourself that's been very durable and you've been flexible and changing, for example, you wouldn't immediately relate to the flower power time with yourself. But this was when you first got your biggest, I suppose at that time, biggest break, would it be?
Round about the late 60s, that's when I started recording, and the Flower Power was round about that time, wasn't it?
It was.
Wasn't it? 68, 67?
Yes.
That's when I started my recording career, round about that time, and but I didn't sort of had no success until 1971, and I actually broke in Belgium first. With Las Vegas, that there was a hit there. They were spread to Germany and Austria, Switzerland, and those places, and then it spread it back into the UK.
And of course, I think a lot of people haven't realised that you've been actually massive on the continent, haven't you?
Yes, I mean that's the strangest thing, that when it sort of went very quiet for me in the UK, I carried on having hit records and hit albums. Particularly in Germany, but I mean, when I say Germany, it always includes Austria and Switzerland and Holland and all those places.
And of course, another aspect of the work I do is I'm tending to look very closely at the songwriters. Mm-hmm. I have Tony Hiller comes on the show each week, and Barry Mason's been in the studio with me.
Right.
And of course, I'm looking at the names Mitch Murray and Peter Callender, who were with you for Las Vegas.
Yeah.
Did you actually meet them beforehand, or had you known about their work? How did that come about?
No, I'd never met them. It was about through my manager that he thought, well, you need to be put with people who are hot at the time. And at the time, Mitch Murray and Peter Callender were hot. They'd just had hits with Cliff Richard, and they'd written the Ballad of Bonnie and Clyde and all these great monster hits, and they came up with Las Vegas. So that was my first sort of introduction. I did what I did for Maria. They came up with that one, and then it sort of we carried on for about 4 or 5 years and did some great albums together.
And of course,
we're still great friends.
And you keep picking up new sets of fans as well, which of course has been a wonderful way to build your career, and a wonderful story. Could you go over this story about the way to Amarillo? Because it's a wonderful story in the way it was written.
Well, yeah, my manager, the strange thing was that my manager was over in New York, and I just had a couple of hits, and he knew Sudarka, Neil Sedaka, and he was in Sedaka's apartment. And he said, Neil, have you got any new song? I manage a singer called Tony Christie, and do you have any new songs? And he says, well, I'm working on a great song at the moment. It's not finished yet. And he sat at the piano and played it. When he got to the shalala bit, he says, we haven't done the word. We don't know what the words are going to be here yet. So they demoed it as it was and sent it back. And we heard it. My producer said, well, we don't want any words there. That is the hook. That is the best bit. Is the shalala bit. So we dashed into it. We rang Sadako and said, "Leave it. We don't let anybody else have it." And we went in the studios, recorded it within days, and it was released within about a week, and became a very, very big hit.
Absolutely fantastic. I love this type of memorabilia about how these songs have developed. What is your feeling about the way, it was reinvigorated with Peter Kay? And, well, Teddy Bernie Clifton was on the video. I don't know whether or not... Because he's been on the show as well.
I know Bernie from years and years ago, yeah.
Yeah? So how did you feel about the way that came out? I mean...
Well, again, this is very strange. I mean... I was living in Spain. I lived over there for 15 years. I lived up the coast from where you are in a place called Oaxaca.
Oh, yeah, I love Oaxaca.
Yeah.
Yes.
We had a great time there.
Mm.
And we were sat one night, my wife and I, watching television, and I was a big fan of this Phoenix Knight, the series.
Yes.
Because it reminded me of my early days in show business, the theatres were closed in the 60s, and all there was, you could learn your trade by doing the social clubs and the workingmen's clubs. That's all that was left. So I it sort of brought back memories for me of how I sort of got started and went through the mill and met these characters. So I was watching the thing, and this famous scene with the Asian elders came on where they did Amarillo, and I nearly fell off my sofa. And from then on, I mean, the next day, the phones were red hot, and I was getting calls from the UK, from disc jockeys in different radio stations. And they were saying they've been inundated with people, particularly kids, wanting to know this song Amarillo. Where can they buy it? And there were a few radio stations that started petitions to try and get it re-released. My son, who was my manager at the time, persuaded me to go back to the UK after sort of 12, 15 years. He rang the record label that had my original and said, do you fancy putting it out as a single? And they said, well, no. Funnily enough, we just had been having a meeting about putting a best of album out, the definitive collection. So would Tony be interested in coming over and doing a tour to promote it? And that's basically what happened. I was on the tour when they put out this thing for the Comic Relief, and I got a top 10 album, and then suddenly this single came out, and then all hell broke loose. I was on a tour bus doing about 50 or 60 phone calls a day. It was absolutely ridiculous.
Yes, and of course, you know, it's like everything in life. You find things as you're going along. I had no idea that you actually appeared at Benidorm Palace, didn't you?
Yeah, I was trying to figure out. It's got to be 12, 15 years ago, I reckon.
Wow. You know, it's so weird that all the little coincidences. I've got a couple of people want to say hello. They're not with me in the studio, but just sent in messages just to make sure I said hello to you. Mike, of course, from the National Society for Children Family Contact.
Yeah.
And Paul Melville said he'd like to make
Paul,
sure.
I haven't seen Paul for a long time.
Well, Paul's on the show with me on a Monday, and basically we're looking at all the Merseybeat acts. And in fact, yesterday we spoke with Mike McGeer, Mike McCartney. Obviously,
yeah.
And just brilliant looking back at old times.
Yeah,
I've got to also say that there aren't many people who will have a claim to fame that there was a TV series where people would probably tune in to hear the signature theme song rather than the program, and that's one claim you've got, isn't it?
I know a lot of people that say that they used to watch the program just for the credits.
Yes.
They said the credits were great, but the programme wasn't very good.
And this is the Avenues and Alleyways.
Alleyways from the Protectors, yeah.
Yeah, I must admit, I think all these songs are so good. They're strong songs, I think, to start with.
Yeah, but there's another story there about that song. I was in the studio with Mitch and Peter. We were making an album, and they said to me one day, "Will you do us a favour? Will you pop into this?" I was in number one studio in Chapels. They said, "Will you nip into Studio 2 and do a demo, because we're submitting a song for a TV series." So I said, "Fine," and they said, "Well, all it is, there's just the one line, you know, a couple of lines to do to see if they like it." And I went in there, and it was remember CCF, the band?
Yes.
Smoke.
And they did the Top of the Pops theme, didn't they?
Da 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 da.
Yes.
Right, the Top of the Pops.
Yeah.
Well, it was there, that was the band in there, and I went in and just let the bit that was written, which was, "In the avenues and alleyways, while you sleep, there's a whole world coming alive. Abel and his brother fighting one another in and out of every dive." And it was just that repeated. And then I went back into my studio and carried on doing the album. They sent it off, and ATV got back onto them and said, "Yeah, we love the song, but we insist on the single as well." So then I had to, they said, "But we haven't, it's only a bit of a song, we haven't finished it." They had to actually write the rest of the song, the beginning of it and the end of it.
Yes.
So, and they did it that night. Came in a few days' time while we're in the middle of the album and said, "Right, here's a new song, we've had it arranged, and the rest of it." So then it became on the album, it became a single.
Absolutely.
So again, it was a very spur-of-the-moment thing.
When you look at you know, your own influences, who would you think has probably influenced you most in your singing?
Singing?
Yeah.
My favourite singer of all in the world is Frank Sinatra. I mean, any single worth its salt will nod their head in appreciation of what he did for popular music. But there's a lot of great singers about it. Matt Monro is probably our best exponent of that kind of singing.
Yeah.
And of course, we've known Michelle, his daughter, for many, many years. That kind of singer, the Vic Damones, the Ella Fitzgeralds, all that sort of the people that are not around anymore, that are not doing it anymore.
Yes. But very sadly, but of course, we do have some locations up and down the coast where I think nice music, I think it's nice, good quality, strong songs,
yeah.
They do proliferate. And I think that, you know, once you find the right place to go and enjoy them, I can just off the top of my head, we have a place called the Malibu Bar in Benidorm. They do a lot of really nice singing. And
yeah.
people, of course, go along. To see live music is still nice,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Oh, it's still alive. And you know, people like Peter Grant.
Oh yes,
yeah. A young singer from Leeds. He, you know, he's still carrying the torch for that kind of music. So it's still healthy, and of course people like Michael Bublé.
I love his. Do you know he's done a follow up version of the old Mel Tolmie hit Coming Home, Baby.
Oh yeah,
and
yeah.
I think there are three key changes in it.
Yeah,
and Boyz II Men are backing him, and the sound in your earphones is
right.
It's amazing, you know.
Yeah.
Tony, I had no notion that you had your own TV show as well, didn't you, in BBC?
I did, yeah, I did. I forget the series, what it was called. But I did one, and they let people, you know, it's one of the one-off specials it was.
Yes.
Vicky Leandros did one, and various people. I did more sort of TV work on the continent than I ever did in the UK.
Yeah, in fact, am I right in saying that Germany was particularly good for you, wasn't
it? Yes, it was.
Yeah. I can't remember who I was talking with, but, you know, whoever it was. I'm sorry about this, my phone's going off. I'll take that and close it. There we are. Basically, I'll leave it on in case there's anybody coming through that is connected with the show, you know.
Yeah.
Now, the other thing I wanted to ask you about was you also had a collaboration with Andrew Lloyd Webber, didn't you?
Yeah, that was about 1976. I did the part of Migaldi on the original album of Evita.
Wow!
And in fact, they wanted me to do the West End production of it, but I was so busy and I just couldn't do it. In fact, they practically begged me to do it, but I was doing so well in. Finally making some money, and, you know, with a young family, I thought that, and what they sort of, the West End is not a very good payer, I've got to tell you this.
Yes.
What they were offering me for to doing 8 shows a week would just about cover the hotel.
Well,
and I was earning so much money on the cabaret circuit, you know, to put my kids through school and do all the usual things, that I thought, well, no, I can't afford to do it. You never know when, you know, things could have, you know, turned a different corner, you never, and things might have turned out different. I could have been a lovey now. I'm not sure. I've been offered a part in Chicago, the one of the main roles in that as well. So again, it's tying yourself down into a theatre for 3 or 4 months.
Yes.
I don't know if it appeals to me.
What I found very interesting is, you know, people forget that there are difficult and the times that you know, you hear the stars have struggled, and so many people only think that it's all about just success. And of course, you know, it's almost like if it's not on the TV in front of you all the time, people forget that there's the hard work that's going in or has gone in beforehand. And as you say, bringing your family up, I mean, it's a difficult time for everybody, isn't it?
Well, yeah, it is. But I mean, it's, as you said, if you're not on television every night, I think you know.
Yes.
I remember once, and this is only like 1974 or 75, when I was going through the customs in Sydney, Australia, and because I got 2 big suitcases, because you know you take your costumes or your suits and I'm away for like 6 weeks, so you've got to take lots of clothes.
Yes.
They singled me out. And said, you know, this, you've got a lot of baggage, a lot of luggage. What do you do? And I said, well, I'm an entertainer. I'm on tour, and I need. Oh, he says, really? What's your name? I said, Tony Christie. Jesus Christ, are you still alive? You know, I mean, it's like I was still having hits around. Well, you're still alive.
It's amazing, you know. In fact, I won't say whose name it is because all my listeners will know. But when I was doing these tribute shows, and I got a little bit I won't say depressed, but it was a little bit I felt a bit sad because these people have had great careers, and I'd never had the chance to talk to them. So I decided I'm going to be very proactive and phone people up and make the contact. You see,
yeah.
So the first one that I did this with was Brenda Lee.
Oh, yeah.
So I was so chuffed, I came, put the name up on the board, and somebody said, I thought she was dead. Well, I mean, come on, you know, just because she's not in the charts right this very minute, she's got a life. And you know what, it was so lovely, when I spoke with her, she was buying an ice cream, because the time difference was able to be, you know, my time, and her time was early in the morning, I think it was.
Yeah.
And she was buying ice cream for the children, you know, grandchildren. And she was just a lovely, ordinary person that's had a great career, still working, and yeah. still doing great concerts. But it's been a great voyage of discovery for me, because, like today, you know, there are aspects of your career, I've loved your songs, and I hadn't realised until they'd all been grouped together just how many great, strong songs you've had, you know.
Yeah.
And looking ahead to your tour coming up in the year 2007, Sunday the 7th of October is your first, I think, is it?
You have probably got more information than me.
Ah, good. Okay. All right, well, I'm noticing you, according to what I'm reading, you've got Sunday the 7th of October at the Symphony Hall, Birmingham.
Ah, yes, that's when it starts, yes.
And then you go to Sheffield the 8th, the Southend Cliffs Pavilion, Cardiff St David's Hall, Manchester Bridgewater Hall, Gateshead, Glasgow the Royal Concert Hall. You know, when you go to these really, really big venues and, yeah. you know, the magnificence of everything, do you still feel that it's nice to get back to maybe some of the grassroots, going to a smaller club every now and again? Do you still enjoy that as much?
Yeah, it's a different way of working on a big concert stage. I recently did a couple of the Warner Breaks.
Oh, yes.
Their old ancestral homes and things that they've turned into hotels. And I did one on Saturday in Cheshire, and it was the audience, I mean, literally were 3 feet away. And I was on the same level, and the band, I got this 12-piece band behind me, and it was all steaming away. And people, when the people came back, they said, it's so different to see it in the close, it's in the cabaret form. It's such a, you know, it's such a buzz you get, a different kind of buzz than you get in a concert sort of venue.
Yes. Is there anything that you really have a passion for away from your singing? Is there something that really is, you know, the big thing in your life?
The reason I'm sort of speaking very nasally at the moment is that I'm a golfer. I mean, that's my off stage relaxation.
Yes.
And a couple of days ago, I went out to do a charity golf for children. And got absolutely soaking wet through. Even with all the waterproofs and brollies and everything, it was so bad. It caused all the flooding in Sheffield and all.
Oh yes, it's been dreadful, hasn't it?
Yeah, I was in the middle of all that.
And you know, when you have a big concert to perform and you have a cold like this, how do you cope? Because you know the pressure must be there to obviously handle the cold and still produce the goods. How do you manage it?
I think you can normally sing through a cold. In fact, to be honest, some of my best recordings have been done with a cold, and because it produces a different sound. It opens all the nasal passages, so you get those clear head notes that normally you have difficulty producing. But of course, it also tends to, you've got this stuff on the back of the throat which causes the soreness, so yeah, you could probably get away with it for one day and get 3 or 4 tracks finished before the voice is really sore.
Yes. Are we going to see you again in Spain? Are you likely to come back?
I'm hoping to get back in September, because it's a little bit too hot in July and August for my wife. She hates the too hot, so we're going to get back in September, and I shall bring my bats along and play in shorts and not get wet through.
Well, look, Tony, if you come anywhere near Altea, which is where we are, or anywhere near where we can pick you up and bring you down to the studio, you'll know you're very welcome. We've all enjoyed your music. It's even lovelier when we get to know who the person is that has made all these lovely songs for us to remember.
Mm-hmm.
And let's hope that maybe we can meet up, because I'd really like that.
That'd be great. It'd be great. I've got friends up there anyway, up in Benidorm. So,
well, it'd be brilliant to see you.
Or working there, living, one of them lives in Altea.
Right. Well, look, you know, it will be really nice to meet you in the flesh, and obviously show you the studios and everything. And in the meantime, all I can say is thank you very much indeed for your time today.
Thanks. An absolute pleasure, anytime.
Lovely. And I'm going to put links, by the way, to your website, if that's okay for you.
Yeah, that's great.
So everybody can get to see where your bookings are and all that sort of
that's
thing.
That's fantastic.
Lovely. Thank you very much indeed, Tony Christie.
My great pleasure.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Cheers, man.
Isn't that lovely? Tony Christie there at 2:36.
Sunrise, this is the last day that I'll ever see. Out in the courtyard, they're ready for me. But I go to my Lord with no fear.